Welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. Bruce, of course, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, and Peg Webb, senior financial advisor with us. And this is a great show, guys. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. Yeah, Susie, it's one of those days, and I actually like these shows, Peg, where we'll try to let the the listener drive the show where they want it to go. Any and all financial questions today on any topic that comes to mind, and we have a couple things in our notes that we've gotten questions that maybe we didn't get a chance to answer in previous weeks that we can go to. But Peg, what are you hearing from friends, clients, colleagues? You want to get the ball rolling? Anything while we're waiting for listeners to jump in? Anything on your agenda that you wanted to hit on?
Well, I think we should just talk about a couple headlines that are out there. I would say that the friends that I have and coworkers are somewhat confused, but yet not. So on January 20th, President Trump signed 26 executive orders. The one that we did a little article on and we put on our insights on wealthenhancement.com is a little blog about a summary, and I just quickly go through it. There's a group of six orders that impact the federal workers, and that means immediate retirement. They would like some federal workers to retire, and there's somewhat of an incentive. It's in across the board. It's an immediate hire freeze, returning to in-person work, which is kind of interesting, reforming the federal hiring process and restoring merit to government service orders. The fourth one being order holding former government officials accountable for election interference. Five is a mandate creating career senior executive service performance plans that allows for immediate termination. And then the last one is reinstating executive order, removing some employment protections for federal workers, and revokes this executive order 14003. Now, summarizing that is, you know, Bruce, this is political, and we try to stay on the far side of complexity when it comes to political things, because we serve many clients with many opinions. And so just to let you know, we're taking the stance here of just educating people on what is this? Well, basically, it's a significant pushback trying to reduce the federal workers. And actually, Trump ran on that campaign. And I would say, you know, President Trump is somewhat that he's got the personality of, well, let's put it right out there. Let's just, you know, and we're kind of used to that in the corporate world. I mean, I've had a career for 40 years and I've had managers just all of a sudden we got called into a conference room and I was delighted that I got called, but yet it was to can us. Like these people that we called in this office, we don't need you anymore. And you're like, what? And then they would hand you these papers and then off you went. So it's not like it's unbelievable to me. But I think, you know, with federal workers, they provide great service for all of us. And there's lots of federal employees that this is just a dramatic way to get this to start. Bruce?
Yeah, well, I like what you said that, you know, we're not taking sides on this politically. We must, as a firm, as advisors, we must remain politically neutral, right? We have to, because we have to look at data and we have to look at facts and advise clients based on facts, not political opinions. And again, like you said, Peg, our clients vary greatly from a political standpoint. And as a practical matter and a pragmatic matter, we don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to take sides. But it also makes sense that we remain politically neutral and just try to look at the economics. So the economics of this, and it probably because there's so many government workers, it probably does impact a pretty high percentage of our listeners to this show right now. So what does this mean to you, and what do you need to do about it? We're telling people, even though you've got some time, I wouldn't wait. I would start making your plan immediately. So, you know, the areas that we're looking at, if you have a pension, a government pension, and you're not sure what to do with that, if you need help, if you are gonna accept the offer and you're gonna retire, we can help you with budgeting and retirement income planning. Retirement income planning might also include things like setting aside or creating an emergency fund if you don't have one. When and how do you draw your Social Security benefit? Or again, for people in the Federal Employee Retirement System, or FERS, we use the acronym F-E-R-S, we can help you on that. And then, are you going to downsize, or what's your lifestyle going to look like? So again, it gets into retirement income planning, but there's some key issues here. So again, not taking sides, saying if it's right or wrong, good or bad, but it's the reality that a lot of federal employees are going to be facing. And I guess our bottom line here is, if you're not sure what to do, we can help you. We can help you with the planning if you don't already have a planner or a financial advisor. So I'm glad you stood there, Peg, because I think this is a big deal, and it's impactful to a pretty high percentage of the population and thus our listeners. Peg?
Yeah, I think the shock of it all is that the letter, if you will, or the email, I should say, it didn't have a lot of clarity up front. And so they've already come out with another version, and a lot of people didn't know if it was even real. And so there's definitely more to come on that. And Bruce, I like the fact that you talked about, you know, talking about what are you going to do with your pension? What are you going to do with your Social Security? Those are things we're doing every single day, not just for federal workers, but it's the same type of financial planning that we do. And I love how you said, if you don't have a plan or you don't feel solid about the plan, you should reach out to some financial advisor, whether it's us or someone that you can relate to. Another one that we got, and I thought I'd bring this up, is because it's very recent, the stock market had a big dive on Monday. And all of a sudden over the weekend, China says, hey, I've got a rival AI, you know, system here called DeepSeek, and it's a lot lower cost than what you've got, NVIDIA. And all of a sudden, the markets were all rocky on Monday, thinking, what? This just came out of nowhere. I like the fact that that came out of nowhere, only that it reminds people, we have no idea what's happening around the world. You feel like you're over-concentrated in one particular stock. You shouldn't be. I mean, you just shouldn't be. We don't know. Now, yes, the markets were volatile this week. They ended up a little bit down, but we had a lot going on. The Fed said they're going to hold interest rates. And then we've got this new tariff policy thing going on. And so I think it's going to remain volatile, Bruce. And the reason I bring this up, because this was the question, is, you know, how long is this going to be volatile from a listener? And, well, we don't know, right? We just know that if you have growth and you feel like you've got a long term, then all these headlines, and we've been saying this for decades, right? If you're confident with the percentage that you have in growth, I wouldn't necessarily just go change everything or park on the sidelines, because the highlights that we're hearing now, they're kind of all new to us. I mean, this federal workers, this, these tariffs, all of this is, I have to admit, these are terms that I didn't talk about for decades. So it's all new. So I think we're going to have to work harder, Bruce, on getting our clients to stay the course with things that they're unfamiliar with that have not happened in history. Bruce?
Well, I love what you just said, stay the course. And again, I know sometimes the media and our clients and people don't want to hear that. Oh, you always say stay the course. Give me something, you know, deeper than that. But oftentimes, or in fact, the vast majority of the time, stay the course is the right answer. Peg, after what happened on Monday, I actually had a couple of clients reach out to me and say, hey, am I in AI? And if I am, I don't want to be. And my response to them was, well, good luck with that. It's almost impossible not to be. If you're using growth funds in a portfolio as part of a portfolio, which we should be doing in a diversified portfolio, some of those funds are going to be investing in companies that are in AI. I just don't think you can avoid it, and I don't think you want to avoid it. Just because Monday was a bad day in that sector, how many good days have there been in that sector? The key is being diversified, though, and not having everything in that sector and not having all of your money in tech or AI, but we still want to maintain some exposure there. The other thing that you brought up, and maybe I'll kind of throw it back to Susie and we'll see if listeners want to talk about it or not, but kind of breaking news since yesterday, Peg, you mentioned tariffs. The president did sign an order on tariffs yesterday that got a little bit of media attention overnight. I don't know if listeners are concerned about it yet. We'll see. But we are imposing, starting on Tuesday, a 25% tariff on Mexico and a 25% tariff on Canada, the two countries that we share long borders with, and also a 10% tariff on China. We'll see if people want to talk about that or not, but I was kind of following the story last night and this morning in case it does come up, but we'll see if listeners are interested in that one. But Susie, maybe we throw out our contact information and see if listeners want to call or text or get involved in the show.
Yeah, 651-461-9226. That's the number to call or text. And as you mentioned, just right then, someone texted in, how concerned should we be about these tariffs? Will they cause the stock market to decline? Will there be market sectors that will benefit? Sort of how do we maneuver this as investors?
Yeah, and again, I'm not surprised that we did get a question. I sort of expected that. So here, Peg, I'll go first if you don't mind, and you can jump in. This shouldn't come as a surprise. He campaigned on this. He told us he was going to do this. And first, let me just explain to people that maybe don't know what a tariff actually is and how it works, because I think, Peg, there's even a lot of confusion about this. So as an example, if we have a 25% tariff on imports from Canada, let's say it's car parts as an example, and a company is buying $50,000 worth of car, an American company is buying $50,000 of car parts from a Canadian company, the American company, not the Canadian company, the American company has to pay the government a 25% tariff or $12,500, 25% of that $50,000. So the government is collecting more revenue, but then what is the impact on the economy? Now when the American company uses those parts to make that car and sell that car, are they just going to eat that loss on that higher tariff that they had to give to the government? Probably not. They're probably going to raise the price of that car, and now the American consumer is ultimately going to pay for that tariff. And so, again, I'm not saying the tariffs are good or bad, but then that might, when you hear how it works, people might say, why the heck are we doing this? What's the point? And the motivation is the U.S. government or President Trump is concerned about illegal immigration and the inflow of drugs, particularly fentanyl, and he wants our bordering countries to get really, really serious to help us prevent this. But Peg, I kind of scratch my head, and Susie, again, I'm not commenting on good or bad, right or wrong, but I don't see the northern border and the southern border as analogous, right? I mean, I don't think we have the same amount of illegal immigrants coming in from the northern border as we do the southern border, nor fentanyl and other drugs coming in from the northern border. So Canada last night, the prime minister and others were very vocal going, what? Why would you attack, you know, we're one of your closest allies. We were there. We came down to California for the fires. If we, you know, we can work together. We can solve problems together, but don't attack us. So what's ultimately, so right away, Canada and Mexico announced they're going to tariff the U.S. 25%, the retaliatory tariff. And I read one economist, Peg, said, so when you create a trade war, in war, nobody wins, everybody loses. So I'm not happy about this. I'm not sure it's going to work or it's going to be good for the economy. But having said that, and I don't know what the market will do when it opens tomorrow, but I still believe in diversification. I still believe in staying the course. I still believe in long-term investments because who knows you know, what kind of compromise they will come to. Is this a negotiating ploy by the president? It hasn't even taken effect yet. It doesn't take effect until Tuesday. Some things could change between now and Tuesday, but that's kind of what happened overnight. I did a little research on it overnight. So does it mean you should get out of the market or not invest in the market? I would say no. Long-term investors should still be putting money in the market and leaving money in the market. But I don't know what the impact is going to be in the short term, Peg.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is this administration is going to be dramatic. And I just talked about it with this federal workers email that that we talked about. It's throwing it out there and kind of seeing what sticks. Now, that in itself may be very volatile because it's headlines that we just read about the federal workers and now the tariffs, and we don't really know what that means. And wow, everybody has their opinion what that's going to mean. But I think just throwing it out there, and then it will settle to something that will be agreed upon. And once again, Bruce and Susie, we just have to basically ride along. And I can't say it enough that if you have growth stocks and you can hold on long term, I think America's best companies and worldwide companies are going to still keep with inflation in the future. That's a number one reason why a lot of our clients, including myself, own growth, because as things cost more, and that's a fear that people have with these tariffs, is you need something to offset, you know, the cost of things. And historically, the stock market has always kept up. I can't say in the future it will, but I do believe in that that's a way to keep up with inflation. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, don't you know, Pat, you said it best. I'm trying to think of a tactful way to do this. I mean, President Trump is a little bull in the china shop, right? Whether you like him or don't like him, I mean, there's never been a political figure like him before. And so you can't get too hung up in the day-to-day things he says or the things he does. You really have to look long-term. Sometimes I'm convinced he's negotiating and he really you just kind of wait and see what policy ends up happening and where we go. But I've said this many times on the show, regardless of government policies, at the end of the day, long term, when we invest in stocks, when we invest in growth, what we're investing in is companies, people, smart, innovative, productive, efficient, well-run companies that will continue to be profitable and continue to grow market share regardless of challenges that they may face. But again, us as investors, we have to have an aggregate return on our money that equals or exceeds the rate of inflation. So again, if this does cause some inflation, and I don't know if it will or not, that makes it even more important that we have stocks, not less. It doesn't mean we should get out of the market. It means we need stocks and we need growth so that our overall return does not, so our money does not lose purchasing power. Susie, I think we have time for one more if we got one.
Well, this is not related to tariffs. This person says, if I retire at 62 and take Social Security but invest it for 5 years, will I be ahead compared to starting Social Security at 67?
What a great question, Peg. It's the age-old debate. Do we take it as early as we can at 62? Do we wait until full retirement age? Or do we wait even longer and take it at age 70? Your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are, and this is what we talk to clients about, is if you take Social Security, the number one thing that happens is you're taking funds from the Social Security versus taking funds from your portfolio. This person says, well, what will I earn in 5 years? Well, that depends. Are you going to sit in a money market? Are you going to buy a CD, treasury? Are you going to invest in the stock market? 5 years is not a long time, so it could be a little bit rocky. But I just look at the entire portfolio of the client, and then, you know, if you want, let's say you have grandkids and you want to give them more if something were to happen to you, well, then maybe you'll pull your Social Security at 62 versus waiting for full retirement age. So there's a lot of issues that you have to kind of look at to say, well, this fits me versus, you know, just looking at other people. So, Bruce?
Yeah, and again, I think part of what's driving that question is, and for listeners that don't know, your Social Security benefit from age 62, which is the earliest that you could take it, until your full retirement age, which let's assume people listening at 67, it can vary a little bit based on when you were born, but that benefit grows by about roughly 6% per year, and then from 67 or full retirement age and until age 70, it grows by 8% a year. So a lot of people say, I don't want to take my Social Security because I don't know if I can earn a higher rate of return on my investment than what the Social Security Administration is going to give me in terms of a higher percentage if I wait longer. But again, there's a lot of other variables to consider. That's everybody's different. Everybody's a snowflake. And we have to really look at that on a case-by-case basis. Susie, I know we're about due for a break, but
we are.
Listeners driving the whole second half.
I love that. And my question to you guys as we take the break is, do you keep investing while you're in retirement? So you're already retired. Do you keep investing while you're in retirement? 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or for Peg, it's your money. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb, and we are inviting you to participate in the program, 651-461-9226. That's the number you can either call or you can also text that and text your questions, 651-461-9226. Before we took the break, the question was asked, is it a good idea or do you recommend, while a person is in retirement, do they continue to invest? Bruce, Peg, either one.
Thank you, Susie. Susie Jones. So, Peg, when you say continue to invest, I'm going to interpret that as meaning probably investing in the stock market. I know you have some strong feelings about this. Peg.
Yes, I do. It's interesting that more and more of our clients at Wealth Enhancement Group are saying to us, I am, you know, I'm retired longer than I worked. So that alone suggests you just can't stop investing. So one of the things I mentioned earlier in the show was inflation. I believe you have to continue to invest. And a lot of clients and people out there may not remember that all your dividends, if you're not pulling them out, are reinvesting. So you're reinvesting to try to stay up with the cost of goods and services. The other thing we're witnessing is healthcare costs. And talk about inflation and how high those costs are. That's another reason that you need to continue to invest. And if you have even a few dollars from your Social Security check or maybe your pension or you got a windfall, make sure that you're investing and looking at growth stocks there. The other thing I'm uncertain of is the future of taxes. You know, how much are we going to have to pay for all this debt that we have acquired? So that worries me. And then the last thing I thought about was beneficiaries. So as I think about myself, I want to leave something to my children and my grandchildren. So if that's a motivation for you, then you also would want to stay invested and maybe continue to invest for that reason alone. Bruce?
Yeah, I'm going to steal a line from you, Peg. When we coach clients on how to save and invest and how to handle their money, yes, it is different at retirement than it was while you were working, but we always coach them that we're advising you for a lifetime, until you leave this world. Now, we don't know when that's going to be, but we make an assumption that maybe it's going to be a really long time. Maybe you're going to be here till age 100. So we're not advising you to retirement, and then you hit the magic age where you retire at 60 or 62 or 65. Then we say, okay, now we can take all your money and put it in, you know, deposit accounts with no risk of principal. No, we wouldn't advise that because that money's got to last for 20, 25, 30, or even longer. Like Beg said, you might end up being retired more years than you worked, and your money's got to last as long as you do. Now, we always also talk to clients about having short-term money with no risk of principal, money market, CDs, maybe some treasury bonds, something like that. short-term money, mid-term money, which might be broadly diversified with some stock, but also a lot of other asset classes, bonds, real estate, gold and silver, and other precious metals, alternative investments, and then growth, or most aggressive, which is mostly stock. As you get older, how much you have in stock might be a lot less at retirement age in your 60s or 70s than it was in your 40s or your 50s. But Peg, I don't think we would rarely recommend that that percentage go to zero. It might be, you know, it might be that you have more safe money than you used to. And I always tell my clients, look, your priorities probably change, right? Before you retire in your 30s, your 40s, even your 50s, your top priority is growth. When you do retire, your priority may shift to income and or preservation of what you've got, but you still want some growth. It may not be your top priority, but it doesn't go away completely as something you want to do or need to do. So to the question, do I still invest after retirement? I would say the answer is yes for almost all people, but the percentage that goes into stocks at retirement may be less than what it was before retirement in your 40s and your 50s. Peg, last word?
No, that's excellent. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. Yeah, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, what are the pros and cons of SPDAs, and what situation would you pick up a SPDA over a similar length treasury bill, assuming you don't plan to withdraw until the expiration date? And can you explain what that is for people? Because I don't know if everybody knows.
Yep, that's a really good technical question, Peg. I think, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, SPDA, is that an acronym for single premium deferred annuity? You want to comment on that one?
It is. It is. I'm getting more questions about that, including my mother asked me a question last week about an SPDA. So a single premium deferred annuity, a lot of times people go to the bank to get a CD. And in the bank, they normally do have maybe a person in the corner of the bank that also offers annuities. And annuities are issued by insurance companies, whereas the CD is issued by the bank. So once you start talking about annuities, there's lots of different variations that you can purchase. But let's stay on the theme of a fixed annuity. So an annuity company would say, I'm going to give you 4%, this is just an example, for 5 years if you give me your money and you're willing to hold on to that for 5 years. Now, what they mean is there's a back-end charge. So if you were to leave early out of that annuity, they could say, okay, we're charging you 1% or 2%, kind of a penalty for leaving. In a lot of cases with a single premium deferred annuity, you could pull out the income if you wanted to, that 4% income, and they wouldn't penalize you on that. So when it's issued by an insurance company, then you have to do a little bit of due diligence, right? Because you're not at a bank now and you don't have the FDIC. The insurance company is saying, okay, you'll be okay. Well, you better research that company and who's issuing that insurance product, because you want to make sure that they're a top-tier company and that they have a good history. So that to me, the conversation I had with my mom is, I said, well, why would you buy an annuity right now? Because my mom's in her 80s, and why would you do that? Because what if something were to happen to you? There might be a penalty at the end. And the other thing is with her, I said, why would you want a deferred interest, right? So if you didn't take out that interest, then you're deferring. It doesn't go on your taxes, but you're deferring. And I said to her, why are you deferring? You know, you're in a lower tax bracket. Why wouldn't you take that money out and pay tax on it now? So there's a lot of pros and cons with an annuity versus a CD, and you need to fit in, if you will, if you have a longer term horizon with an annuity than you do with a CD in the bank. Bruce?
Well, I think a lot of people, Peg, that was a really good answer, by the way. I want to compliment you on that and personalizing it with your mom. But I think a lot of people, Peg, probably oversimplify that question, and they're driven by the interest rate alone. So to use your example, if they can go get 4% for 5 years on an annuity, they might want to jump all over that without if the CD rates right now are less than 4%, they might go for the higher interest rate. But as you said, there's a lot of other things to consider in that, you know, besides the rate. And where do you think rates are going to go? Are they going to go up or down? If you lock in 4% right now and interest rates go up in 6 months from now, there's CDs or money markets where you can make 4.5 or 5%, then you might regret that decision to lock in 4%. But of course, I know nobody knows where rates are going to go. The old joke is, I know what they're going to do. They're going to go up or they're going to go down or they're going to stay the same. I just don't know when. But it's not as easy as just looking at the interest rate. There's a lot of other things to consider before making that decision. But yeah, they have their place in the right circumstances. A single premium deferred annuity is a tool that we can use at Wealth Enhancement Group also, and it's appropriate for the client based on all the variables that we look at. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter asked the question, what are your thoughts on annuities for income?
Kind of, Peg, kind of taking the question we just had, and we can take it even a little bit further and dig a little bit deeper, I guess. Peg?
Yeah, there's pros and cons. So there is annuity companies and their insurance companies that are providing lots of variations of an annuity. Now, first and foremost, the basics is that if you invested in an annuity, you can defer the income. You can purchase it outside an IRA. You could purchase it inside an IRA. That would already be deferred. But there's pros and cons. And why do I say that? Well, the insurance companies are coming out with products that are kind of a fixed and a variable annuity. And they combine it in one particular contract. And so what happens is the annuities have a lot of complexity once you start moving out of just having a fixed annuity. So if you do look at them, make sure that that someone is explaining to you the pros and cons of that. One of the negatives is, and I've witnessed this with my clients, well, they say, okay, I'm okay being 5 to 8 years with a penalty if I need this money back out. And the insurance company will indeed charge you a penalty if you change your mind. And if the annuity doesn't work out for you, then it could cost you a lot of money. So in my career, I've always looked at both to look at the pros and cons. There are clients that have really high incomes, right, and taxes, and they don't want to have any more 1099s on their annual taxes. That's a way of deferring your growth, you know, instead of getting that 1099. So those are a couple reasons, the pros and cons. Bruce?
Yeah, that was really, really good. And the only thing I will add, and again, you can probably do an entire hour on annuities. Again, we always have to be careful from a compliance standpoint in terms of talking about any strategy, whether it's annuities or funds or whatever, that we make sure that in a mass communication like this, we talk about the good and the bad. And that's true of all investments, right? No investment is all good. No investment is all bad. But this idea of the annuity providing a guaranteed income can be appealing for the right clients. And I volunteered on the show before that I personally have invested in annuities, and I can speak to myself. The reason I have done that is a combination of things. Number one, and you mentioned this, being able to control income at retirement to try to mitigate or be as efficient with taxes as you can. An annuity can be a tool that can help me do that. An annuity can also be a tool that helps me still participate in the stock market if I want to use a variable annuity. So there's market risk, but maybe less risk. Maybe the annuity has certain features and benefits that protect me against some of the potential market losses. So that makes it sound really, really good. But like you said, there's good and bad. I don't get those benefits for free, right? The annuity might have some extra cost or a higher expense drag in order to get those benefits. And then so as an investor, or you and I as the advisor, we have to communicate to our client, here's what you get, here's what it costs to get that, so you can make a fully informed decision and do a cost-benefit analysis and determine if this is a good strategy for you or not. I would say to the texter that an annuity as part of a broadly diversified portfolio and as part of a strategy to create your retirement income can be a good idea, but I would never tell somebody, put all of your money into an annuity. It would be part of a broadly diversified portfolio with other investments, and an annuity may be part of the of your overall strategies. But like a lot of things, sometimes people want to go all in. Just like when I get the calls about, should I get out of the stock market and all my money in gold and silver? And I would say, no, don't do that. Gold and silver as part of a broadly diversified portfolio is fine, but I would never put all my money there. An annuity as part of an overall retirement income or investment strategy is fine, but I would never say go put all of your money into an annuity. So again, it's a tool that we can use in the right circumstances for the right client. And I use them myself personally, individually as an investor. But again, you have to understand they're complicated. You have to understand what you're getting, what you're not getting, what it costs to get that, so you can make a fully informed decision. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. Question on 401k. When you get to 73 and you have to take withdrawals from your 401k, should you take out additional funds from the 401k to pay the taxes on the withdrawal? Thanks.
What a good question. So pay required minimum distribution. And for listeners that don't know, 401k or traditional IRA, you know, kind of going to work the same way. There's a minimum that you have to take out when you hit that age by law. And the question is, well, should I take out more to pay the tax? Now, the first thing, Peg, before I throw it to you, that occurs to me, if I take out more, that's also going to increase my tax. The larger the withdrawal or the larger the distribution, the higher the taxes are going to be, right?
Yeah, the way I would look at it is, you know, I encourage people to do their estimate with their taxes before year end, right? So now we're in 2025. So what you could do is plug in some numbers with that additional 73-year-old RMD on your tax return and see if that pushes you into a different bracket, or do you have room in a lower bracket? So that's how I would calculate how much I should take out. That's already mandated by Uncle Sam. But should you take additional, I love that idea, because what if you're in a low, low tax bracket? You'd want to get that out of there and pay tax. The only thing that has come up several times in the last month is taking extra out of your IRA if indeed you may have a healthcare need or go into a nursing home or assisted living or something like that. That's tax deductible. So if you have a $6,000 a month fee for living in one of those facilities, you can then put that on your itemization of your taxes, and you can use IRA dollars to offset that. So I'm not dramatic about people taking more and more money out of their IRAs if I see that they possibly could have an event where they need housing, assisted living, or long-term care housing, because that's tax deductible. Bruce?
Well, and the other thing I think of, and that was a great answer also, Peg, but the other thing I think of, if I take the question and I move backwards a little bit. So the texter's like, I'm 73 and I must take a required minimum distribution. Should I take more? And your answer, spot on. Yeah, maybe, if you can soak up a low tax bracket. But where we also get to our clients is before you get to the age of required minimum distribution, many people have been coached to think, don't touch your IRAs, don't touch your 401ks until the government forces you to do it at age 73 and they make you take the required minimum distribution. We often coach clients to do it sooner, and they go, why would I do that? Then I have to pay taxes on it. And we would say, yeah, but at 10% or 12% or at a really low bracket, and you're never going to pay less than that. So why not take it now and pay a lower tax rate? Even if you don't need money for lifestyle, for income, maybe you can do what we call a Roth conversion and shift it into a Roth. Or maybe you do use it for income and you take a trip that you weren't planning on, because you got extra income this year that you didn't count on because you can get it at a low tax rate. This idea that we just wait until required minimum distribution age and then take that RMD, you may want to take more sooner and you may want to take more later. You can always take more than the required minimum. You just can't take less. So I think we have time for at least one more.
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, it is Ask Them Anything. So whatever's on your mind, financially speaking, what about an RSA? We just found out upon death, it gets refined to employer. Spend it or save it for potential nursing home. And again, please tell us what an RSA is.
Peg, I have to confess, I don't know what an RSA is. Do you?
No, I have no idea.
I wonder if they typed it wrong.
How about an HSA?
That's what I bet. There you go.
I bet it's a health savings account.
I think, especially because they were talking about a nursing home. Good one.
So it's similar here to the answer that I had on the other one with the 73-year-old is that when you're talking about a health savings account, the only negative about that, I have a large health savings account. My husband keeps asking me, why are we not putting our medical bills in and getting our money back? Well, I like it to grow, so I've got it in growth. And one of the things that has to happen is we need to take that out before we both die, meaning there isn't a beneficiary on the back end other than ourselves. So you have to you're risking if you leave it all in there, just maybe for a healthcare event or long-term care or something like that down the road. You look at the definition of if you can have a beneficiary. Bruce?
Yep. Susie, I think we're all out of time. I don't think we can get any more in today.
Well, that's right. But I want to remind anyone who called, they can certainly call you guys at any time. That's good to know. So if you did not get your question answered today, that number is 1-888-6-ADVICE. 1-888-6-ADVICE. Hopefully that's easy to remember. And someone at Wealth Enhancement will certainly call you back and talk to you about what your options are. You can always email questions as well. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Hope you learned something today. Make it a great week and have a good weekend.